Bob Brundage. To date is the February the 19th, 2004. And today we're talking to good old friend Randy Page back in Danbury, Connecticut, my old hometown. And looking forward to an interesting interview about his square dancing experiences. So, Randy, why don't you give us a little information about where you were born and brought up, and a little bit about your early square, your early childhood days before square dancing.
Well, I was born and brought up in Norwich, Connecticut, which is in the southeast corner of the state. And it's really hard to go back too far beyond square dancing memories because it was interesting when I knew this interview was going to come up. I said, okay, what's my first square dancing memory? And my first one was my parents were doing a dance demo at the tercentenary of the city of Norwich, Connecticut, which was in 1959.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember riding in a coach to where they had the program, and, you know, I went with my parents, and I was watching them dance. And so, you know, that's back when I was 5, 6 years old.
Right, right. So well, that's interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
A couple of other particularly strong square dance memories from early on is I remember sometimes going with my parents to a dance and listening to the caller and then meeting him again many, many years later. His name was Paul Tobridge.
Oh, yeah.
And it was quite interesting because he had always seen me as a little kid with my parents, and then later he came and danced quite a bit to me.
Right.
Another interesting remembrance is down in my parents' basement, the first round dance club for southeastern Connecticut started. It was called Anchors and Chains and was started by Ray and Claire Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
And Ray Anderson was from Rhode Island and was initially a caller.
Right.
And he had problems with high blood pressure, as I remember, and he was told he had the calling was too stressful, so he moved on to being a round dance cure.
Right, right. Well, then how did you get interested in calling?
Well, I started dancing as a preteen. Around 1960-1961, to a person that most people think of as a rare ambulance cure, and that's Fred Gertner.
Right.
When he first started, he wanted to be a square dance caller, and he started out with a group of kids in his basement. And it was ostensibly, to some degree, linked with Ledyard Squares and Shirts and Skirts was their teen club, but then he had this pre-teen club that was thrown in his basement.
Right.
Then that folded after a couple years when Fred went on to round dance queuing, and then there was a teen club in Norwich that I joined called Rose City Teens, and at that point in time, the calling bug bit.
Right.
Okay. And I started fooling around at home of calling when I was 15, 16, 17. I really consider I started calling when I was 17.
Right.
Because that's when I really started to actually do it.
Okay. What were your first experiences? Just calling some club or?
Yeah, I can remember doing my first guest singing call at Rose City Teens to the old Top Chinatown.
All right.
Ernie Kinney's version.
Yeah.
And barely being able to live through it.
Right.
Like I said, the bug had bitten by that time and point in time. So I decided I'd go to caller school with Earl Jones to the now Brand Duke.
Okay.
And
that was one of my next questions. Who might be some of your mentors?
Well, I have three or four different mentors. Certainly, you're one of the ones in the list.
Good.
Because when I was still a new caller and I was living with my parents in Heritage Village, you were calling for Woodbury Town and Country back then.
Right.
And I can remember going over to one of your fun nights, and I remember you doing Uptown and Downtown.
And
I've used that myself many times since then, because it's there are so many things that you can use just out of one night, or just to just to entertain a group, and now sometimes today we forget. So that's one of mine. Certainly Earl Johnston was a great mentor. He people always talk about Marshall Flippo's timing, but I still think Earl had better timing.
Okay. I'll tell Marshall that. He's going to be here next week.
Well, the characterize the difference is that with Marshall Flippo, it's always smooth and flowing and slick.
Right.
But with Earl, I always felt like I was on ice skates.
Right.
It was smooth. It went beyond just feeling nice. It was just almost an out-of-body experience. It was just so slick.
Right.
And certainly when it comes to your brother, Al, he was very insightful in terms of not just how you treated dancers, but the way you entertained dancers, got them excited, got them interested. There are a lot of callers out there who try all sorts of things to try and get the floor interested, doing it very blatantly. And what was something with Al was he had developed so many techniques that people just knew they were excited to dance to him. And it wasn't like it was something blatant in front of them. It was the charisma,
right,
and the excitement of feeling the inflections in his voice.
Right. Well, when did you first go to caller school?
I first went to caller school back 1970.
Okay.
It was actually the first year I went was the first and only time that Earl and Al ran the school in Scotts, Oquaga, over in New York.
Oh, yeah.
They only did that one summer.
Right, I remember that.
And it was actually just a beginner caller school there that year.
Uh-huh.
And there are four of us out of that school who are still calling that I'm aware of.
Oh.
One would be Rusty McLean.
Yeah.
Another would be Mike Callahan.
Yeah.
Myself. And I'll probably think of the name later in the interview. There's a gentleman out in Pennsylvania who was
okay,
also at that school. And there were probably, I think there were 20 guys in the school.
Right.
So for that many of us still to be calling is really says quite a bit about how successful it was.
Right, that's for sure. Well, as long as we're on the subject of caller schools, tell me how you finally wound up to be proud owner of the caller school that Al and Earl used to run.
Well, that's very interesting. Of course, it happened over a period of time. I was calling at West Turner's, and we were fortunate enough to get Earl to come over and do a dance for us there, a mainstream dance.
Right.
If you remember, West Turner's was a mainstream group, but we had a lot of very good dancers, and Earl came over and did a really terrific dance. And I remember talking to Earl that night and saying, you know, I had been thinking about doing caller education, and I had a couple of presentations worked up, and I would like to try one at caller school.
Uh-huh.
And Earl said, oh, that's great. And he and Al set it up with me, and so I came up and did a presentation at the caller school.
Great.
And then, of course, I got invited back another year. Well, why don't you come back and do another presentation?
Okay.
The next year. And for a few years, I just did presentations. Didn't come up and fully work on staff. I also had started to work on the procedure for becoming a caller coach at that point in time.
Oh, yes.
I finally got eased into becoming more and more until I finally became a regular member of the staff.
Right.
And then in terms of actually getting to school, I think Ken and I were both in shock.
Okay.
Earl and Al took us to dinner one night. We all met and had dinner, and they were discussing what we were going to be doing, you know, to set up the school for next year.
Right.
And they said, well, we're going to ask you to do a little bit more this year. And they went through, you know, what they wanted us to do. And they said, part of this is because we're trying to get you ready, because this is going to be the last year that we're doing the school.
Oh.
The two of you are going to be taking it over. And, we were certainly overjoyed at it, but it was also quite shocking.
I can imagine, right?
And it's been a challenge for myself and for Fran and Ken while he was still involved with it, and even Mike now, because the school always had a reputation for being one of the best in the world, not just best in the country, because I was down at Florida Sunshine Festival this year, and up walks one of our students from Japan a couple of years ago.
Sure, right.
And he's planning on coming back, and we've had people from New Zealand, and we've had people from Taiwan, as well as Japan. So we have somebody coming from California this year. We had somebody from Minnesota last year, somebody from Texas. So they come from all over. And I've always felt driven to deliver the absolutely best school that I possibly can.
Right, right. Well, I'm sure that's the feeling of the people around the country, too. Getting away from the caller school, tell me about some of the callers associations you belong to. I know you belonged to Connecticut for a long time.
Well, actually, I'm doing duty as president of Connecticut again this year.
Good.
Partially because Connecticut had a couple of rough years.
Yeah.
So I kind of said, okay, I'll step up to the plate, because it takes, we all have our times when we need to step up to the plate.
Right, right.
And that was my feeling this year. So I stepped up to the plate and said I'd do it. And in addition, what I've done this year is been out trying to twist different callers' arms who have fallen out of the association, getting them busy and active in it.
Good.
A couple of examples would be Rusty McLean hasn't belonged to him a couple of years. And,
right.
Rusty is back as a member of the association.
Oh, good.
I
want to talk to he and Clint, too.
Well, absolutely.
Right.
Bob Paris.
Oh.
I actually talked him into joining this year.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah. I'm basically the other prime caller in the Hudson Valley at this point in time, and over the years, Bob has mellowed.
Uh-huh.
And he realizes now that you can't kill fours and still keep them.
Right.
And the way I approached him was, I said, I think, you know, none of us are always going to agree, but I think it's better if you're inside the association than outside the association.
You got that right. Right.
And he agreed with me, and he said, okay, Randy, you know, I'll join back up.
Okay.
So I got Bob to join the Callers Association. I don't think he's been in for 20-some years.
Right, right.
I think that's recent, but certainly Connecticut callers have learned a lot because we have so many really good callers in it.
Right.
The other Callers Association that I'm active in is the Callers Council of New Jersey.
Okay.
And something I found interesting about it was, you know, they had asked me to join, and I said, well, some of the guys feel uncomfortable about having me, you know, when they consider me almost a carpetbagger or whatever. They said, well, you actually call in New Jersey more than a lot of our members.
Yeah, right.
And then when I went to join, somebody kind of raised that question, and Dot Lowenstein said, no, Randy's not the first member from Connecticut. Al Brundage was the first member from Connecticut.
There you go.
And so at that point in time, and since I'm from Danbury, and, you know, of course, Al's originally from Danbury and moved on to Stanford, but it certainly made things much more comfortable down there, and I'm still very active in the Hudson Valley in New Jersey in terms of calling.
Right. Okay, well, tell me about some of the festivals you've been to, maybe national conventions.
Well, I've been to, three national conventions. I don't get to go as much as I'd like because I work a real job.
Right.
But I went to the one in Anaheim in 1988 and actually took a group of dancers to it. And we went out and we did a whole week's trip. And that was when the National was still really large.
Right.
And I can remember I only got a couple of spots at that National. But one of them was in the Plus Hall, like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I had 177 squares dancing to me.
Right.
And so that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
And it seemed like I had to sign autographs for more time than I was up there calling.
Right. Right. Well. Well, you're active in the Connecticut Festival, probably, and how about the New England?
Well, active in the New England, and actually, I was going to mention another one that I did one year. I did the Hunter Mountain Country Music Festival.
Oh, did you? Okay.
And actually, I did that with Mike Callahan.
Oh, yes.
And it was interesting because, unbeknownst to me, I was doing Brown Eyes Blue as a singing call, and I did a reasonably good job, but I'm glad I didn't realize that Crystal Gayle was behind me listening to it.
Oh, gracious.
Since that's one of her songs.
Yes, I remember it. Yeah, she was one of my favorites.
And so, you know, you turn around, and then she's there, and she's she was really very gracious. She said she liked what I did with it and had never heard it used as a square dance.
Right.
And was very pleased that, you know, she said, you know, you kept the right tonality to it. And so that's always neat when you get to see the original star.
Right.
Hear you do something like that.
Yeah, well, she was very gracious about it, right?
It was something I observed from that festival, having been backstage, having a backstage pass, was she was as gracious and nice backstage as she was on stage as she was elsewhere.
Right, right.
There were other performers who did not have that level of professionalism. But let me tell you, you know, she was just an absolute sweetheart.
Oh, that's great.
I have a funny story around that festival, so
okay.
I'll include this. About 3 months before that festival, Bob Barasa always had a camping weekend, and I always did one day of it every year. And Mike Callahan always did the Friday afterwards.
Okay.
And Mike hadn't seen me at that point in time for probably 20 years. And we decided, well, we'd stay for Mike's night of dancing. So we stayed there. I borrowed Derek Century Club book, and I went up, and I had Mike signed a Century Club book.
Okay.
You know, and I said to him, well, you know, I'm trying to do a little calling, too. And so he's chatting to me with me for about 4 or 5 minutes. He says, oh, by the way, what's your name? And I said, Randy Page. He's there. I'm going to kill you. I'm doing a festival with you.
Ah, that's priceless. That's great.
Oh, yeah. It was all in good fun. And I don't know if you realize this, but Mike is now the assistant executive secretary of Caller Lab.
Yes, I did.
Which means
that.
He'll eventually be the next one.
Right, right. So, well, which brings up the point, what's been your affiliation with the Caller Lab?
Well, I go back to 1976. I was invited by Earl Johnston to join Caller Lab, and that's when it was still it's the first year it started to get big, but it was still a relatively smaller and exclusive organization.
Right.
Getting an invitation from somebody like that was, really quite pleasant for me. I think it was a case of where Earl and Al probably sat down and said, well, which of our guys do we think are going to develop over the years, and let's...
Right.
Invite them, because I can remember Al had invited Clint the year before.
Uh-huh.
And so we were all getting opportunities, and quite honestly, I think they were very smart that way. They realized that we were going to be their legacy.
Right, right. So, well, have you ever been out of the country calling?
Well, actually, yes. It's the most unusual situation I've called in would have to be one of these. We took a group to the Greek islands and did a Greek islands cruise.
Okay.
And then we actually had a square dance in Plaza San Marco, Venice.
Okay.
And so that was really neat. I also was in, while I was in college, I actually called in a couple of square dance clubs in Germany when my concert choir was doing a tour, and Chris Veer was over there at the time, and he gave me, they were doing a festival, and he said, oh, gee, well, we're going to have you call with us.
Okay.
And so that was really neat, and I remember another person who was around the dance leader in the Heidelberg area. His name was Augie, and I can't think of his last name.
Okay.
But he had also set up a dance for me to call.
Right.
And it was actually part, they had a program during the summer, which was when I was there, at the castle on Heidelberg.
Okay.
And I got to do... a couple tips at that, so that was really neat, too.
Well, great. How about recordings?
Haven't pursued that. That may come in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
My son Derek has always been interested, he's always square danced. He was a music major in college, and one of his specialties was voice, and the other one was composition.
Uh-huh.
And so he's actually taken some square dance music and is working. I actually have a couple pieces of music of his that I'm using right now, and everybody's enjoying it, because even if it's technically synthesized, but it isn't synthesized the way that you would think with the really, really synthetic-sounding music. It's using a new technique called sampling.
Oh.
where what they do is they actually take the instrument playing different pitches.
Yes.
And they can bring it into the recording. And every place there's a musical note, the computer will plug in the sound of that instrument playing that note.
I'll be darned.
Well, it doesn't sound, it still doesn't sound as good as Louie and Eddie and Jimmy.
Okay. Yeah, the old Pioneer Trio, right. Well, I'd be interested to know, have you ever done any round dance queuing?
Yes. I queued for quite a few years. One of my first groups, well, when I was in college in Ohio, there were only two round dance queuers in the area, and all the callers were responsible, basically, in their own clubs for doing rounds of the month.
Right.
And the one fortunate thing in college was we only had the two queuers in the area, but one of them was Frank Leonard.
Okay.
And I got to dance with Frank, but Frank also worked with me on queuing.
Uh-huh.
So I was extremely lucky to have somebody who was one of the best leaders in the country at that point in time help me. And so when I came back to Connecticut and I was doing one group and they said, well, the reason I got Greenwich Square Dance Club, they had two or three callers they were looking at. And when they found out that I could do rounds too, I got the job.
Okay, good.
Well, and part of it was, if you think about it, Al still had Stanford at that point in time, and Al did the rounds at Stanford.
Right, right. Yeah, I used to do the rounds at Milford, right. Yeah. Well, how about contra dancing?
I have not. I can call a couple simple contras, like on the road to Boston. If I'm doing a fun night, I'll do two or three simple contras. In terms of dancing contras, I really used to love it at Caller School when we used to have Duke Miller come over. I've also danced to Dudley Laughlin.
Oh, yeah.
And I can also remember, well, they still have some contras at Caller Lab, but I can remember several years ago at Caller Lab, we'd have an evening and we'd do contras, and the first half of the meeting was the easy contras, and the second half of the evening was the New England triples and duples and triple minors and type of things.
Right.
That took some real skill to do, and you'd see some of the other people drift off.
Yeah, I hear you. Right. Well, let's see. I'm just looking at the tape machine. It looks like we still have a few minutes left on this side. And
okay, can I tell you about a couple of unusual dances I do, darling?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I have probably what your brother Al has said is probably one of the ultimate fun nights he's heard about to be able to do. About 8 years ago, my wife had this woman called up, said, I'm Sissy York, I'm Mrs. Watson's secretary, and we'd like you to do a square dance for us up in Maine. You know, we have this end of the summer party.
Uh-huh.
And Fran's there looking at the calendar, and she's saying, well, you're all the way up by Mount Desert Island, you know, Maine. We would love to do this, but there's no way that I can think of that Randy can get back to Sturbridge, Massachusetts for, you know, for noontime tomorrow to be able, you know, the next day to be able to do the caller school.
Right.
And the lady says, oh, well, that's no problem. Our jet will pick you up wherever you need and drop you off afterwards wherever you need.
Right.
And come to find out that this is this is Thomas Watson Jr.'s widow. And Thomas Watson Jr. was the His father was took IBM from a tiny little company to a international business machine company, and his son Tom Jr. is the one that took it into computers.
Well, great. Yeah.
So they fly me up there in their jet every year. I've done this for 8 years.
Right.
And it's a fun night and for the rich and famous.
Right.
And I didn't find out, I found out this one really, really interesting fact last year at a wedding. They had me do a I'm doing usually two dances a year for the family, and this past year they had one of the young ladies get married, and so for the rehearsal dinner they wanted the square dance.
Okay.
And it was funny because one of the guys there was taunting the groom about how can you ever be a successful corporate chieftain if you are interested in or like the square dance. So I had my chance later in the evening, and I talked about Henry Ford.
Oh, yes.
And what was interesting is Tom Watson Sr.'s granddaughter, but, you know, Tom Watson Jr.'s daughter,
right,
said to me, "Now I understand why we always have square danced every year."
Uh-huh.
That Thomas Watson Sr. was good friends with Henry Ford.
There you go.
And had danced, you know, if you went out there and you were there on a Saturday night, he had a square dance.
Right. Over, and still talking with Randy Page back in Danbury, Connecticut. So I know you were had a very interesting story, and we're just about to complete that. So was there anything else you wanted to add before we continue?
No, not really. It's been nice because it's given me some opportunities. I got doing these dances. I got to meet Pierre DuPont, and I'm actually going to be going down and doing a dance in the governor's mansion next year in Delaware.
There you go. Well, it's going to be before long. You won't be talking to us mere mortals anymore. Well, okay. One of the things I've been asking all the callers that I've interviewed, in your long-time experience with square dancing, do you have any regrets? Is there anything you wished you'd done differently?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I think that I think Caller Lab itself is a wonderful idea, a wonderful organization. I think we made some mistakes back in the 70s. And I think that the mistakes was not coming up with the mainstream program. I think the mainstream program was wonderful. I think our mistake was coming up with the PLUS program. And the reason that I say that is that unfortunately dancers have a tendency to perceive that, just like buying gasoline, well, if you can get PLUS or high test for the same price you can get regular, well, you must be getting more for your money with a PLUS dance.
Right.
And I think that that was the start of the downward spiral to some degree.
I see.
Mainstream dancing, when I'm... One of the things a lot of people tell me, oh, well, you're such a good PLUS caller, and what they don't realize that they're telling me is that when I call a PLUS dance, they like the interesting mainstream that I do from the non-standard applications.
Right.
The PLUS I just throw in just to keep them happy so that they know it's a quote-unquote PLUS dance.
Right.
One of the interesting techniques that I've done the last couple of years is if I'm doing a, I'm calling at a club as a guest, what I'll do sometimes is I'll do an unannounced mainstream tip.
Okay.
And I'll ask the people at the end of the tip what I did different.
Okay.
And I'll get things like, well, that tip was a little faster, that was more exciting, or the material was really different, but I'll never get that it was a mainstream tip.
Right.
And then I'll tell them that it was a mainstream tip, and I'll have people say, no, that was too interesting, it was too much fun, you know, it couldn't be mainstream. And I said, no, the problem is that we've taken mainstream and made it like it's class level.
Right, right.
And so that's if there was something I was going to redo, it would be the first thing I'd redo.
Okay.
The second thing that we've started to deal with in this area is the Hudson Valley has a club in it called Dragonwood. And Dragonwood is a club for people to walk in off the street and dance.
Oh, great.
And the idea of Dragonwood was that Slim Sterling was always busy in that area doing that type of dancing.
Right.
And the feeling was, and my feeling still is, that square dancing, the problem is right now that we've knocked the bottom out of the pyramid.
Right.
And the bottom of the pyramid is fun nights and, one-night square dance parties and walk-in dances like this where people don't have to have experience and they don't have to dance every single week. They can dance twice a year.
Right. This is a community dance program type of thing.
Yeah, only it isn't even really community dance in that
yes.
It's absolutely walk-in.
Right.
And what's interesting is some of those people then later decide, yeah, they'd like to join a regular square dance group. But there are some who are just going to stay there.
Right.
One of the things I've been doing the last several years is I've been using the multi-cycle lesson program.
Yes.
And that's been very successful. I've been doing it at the Danbury Club, which is Euro Club. In fact, I'll mention this to you while we're on the line. I doubt you'll be out here in May, but they're trying to see how many of their callers that they can get to show up at that May dance.
Well, and I'll be happy to send me a ticket.
I'll tell them to send you a ticket.
Okay.
You mean a plane ticket, right?
Yes, right.
And
I'd love to go.
Yeah, I said to them, well, I'll mention it to Bob when I talk to him or
right.
Send him an email. And I'll mention that to the president of Mad Hatters.
Okay.
But the interesting thing about multi-cycle is that what it does is for years and years as callers we talked about, well, what we really need is a holding program. And it's worked in effect that way, and it's worked extremely well at Mad Hatters.
Right.
Mad Hatters is ostensibly a plus club, but it's really not just a plus club. It's really a mainstream club and a plus club.
Right.
At this point in time. And with the multi-cycle, you know, we have basically two semesters of lessons going on all the time, old basic program, and then mainstream program.
Right.
And what we found out over the years is that it goes back to the way round dance teachers have taught for years, so they have easy and intermediate on the same night.
Right.
Well, we're doing the same thing with square dancing. And what's happened is somebody completes cycle A and they start cycle B and they start to get a little frustrated. It used to be that they just drop out. Now
right.
What we find out is they just stop coming to cycle B, but they still come to the easy.
Yes, right. Well, that's great.
And sometimes later they move up, sometimes later they don't. But what it does is it gives us multiple groups within one.
Right.
But the most important thing being that we're holding on to more dancers.
Right.
My feeling is when we... the more people we keep inside the activity, regardless of the program that they're dancing, people inside the activity are much better salesmen than people who feel that they've been forced out because they couldn't do the level or whatever.
Yes, very well said. Right. Well, getting back to Dragonwood, do you foresee this as any kind of a future for square dancing?
Absolutely. I think one of the interesting things that's happened this year my being president of the Connecticut Callers Association is we've just offered CASDIC a $2,000 promotional grant for square dancing, asking them to participate financially in it too.
Yes.
And one of the things that's come onto the table that we've discussed is doing a couple of Dragonwood type of programs in Connecticut.
Right.
And I'm wholeheartedly in favor of that, and I'm hoping that's one of the things that we'll get out of it, is just a simple walk-in square dance program, because I believe that that's what it's really all about, is we need to rebuild the square dancing from the bottom. I think too often we try and build it from the top down. It doesn't work that way.
No, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Well, this has all been very interesting, Randy. I'm really happy to have the chance to talk with you about all this, and I think we're about finished for the evening, though, unless you can think of something else you'd like to add.
No, nothing else on the tape. I do want to mention one other thing to you when we get done.
Okay, very good. All right, then, in that case, let's call this the end of our interview, and thank you so very, very much for taking the time to talk with us this evening. So just hold
it. Thank you, Bob, for giving me the opportunity. I feel blessed to be able to talk to one of the founders of the activity.
Well, thank you very much. So,